On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, a minute past the hour, and a brand new week of conversation radio beginning on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where the Listen Live button is for those of you who listen to Windows Media Player. The other streams are easily accessible at WhiteRoseSociety.org, as is the podcast address, the feed address. The feed address for Dr. Bill O'Brien is also at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for his program. A reminder, Dr. Bill is on the road this week. He's up in his beloved native New England and will not be back for any live shows this week, so we're going to rerun some, the death of populism and the origins of progressivism are pretty fascinating stuff, and if you missed it the first time around, we're running it this time through. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, it is the 12th day of August 2013. We are live from the hills and hollers, as John Fox noted in the intro, of almost level West by God, Virginia, as usual. And, well, busy weekend, huh? I don't mean like I got anything accomplished, but just, well, you know what day it is, right? More and Monday. Mm-hmm. Lots of more ands. And even some more ands getting called out, which I thought was rather fascinating. Maybe some audio of that here in a little bit. Let's see. A gentle reminder, we find ourselves in a roughly $500 hole this evening. Because of, about a $400 hole. Thank you, among other things, folks. Proof positive that the subscription widget on HeadOnRadioNetwork.com works very well. Three subscriptions rolling in this weekend. So thank you to Anthony, and thank you to Linda, and thank you to Waggy. Thank you all very, very much. That took a bite out of it. Now we're trying to just finish off the last of July. Here on the 12th of August, we're trying to still get out of July and get even with the month of August. So thank you. Not like, you know, get even with, I'll see you in hell, August. No, but trying to stay financially even because, well, the shortfall in June caused July, well, you know, we're backed up. And if we could come up even, it would make life considerably simpler. So, yeah, about $400 this evening would take us into decent territory, because we have a brace of bills to pay coming up that are just, well, they're the monthly bills, and they're intimidating, to say the least. It is the 12th day of August, and just, I don't know why these little things stay on little brain cells that have otherwise forgotten much more important things, but probably nobody else is doing a This Day in History on this topic, so why not? A lot of folks have seen either the original movie Walking Tall with Joe Don Baker or the remake with, what, Vin Diesel or some person with one name or, yeah, the Rock or Vin Diesel, I forget who. And it's the story of a man named Buford Pusser and a very complicated, bloody, violent situation down on the Mississippi-Tennessee line in a little county called McNary County, Tennessee. And it was, long about it was August the 12th, 1967, when McNary County Sheriff Buford Pusser allegedly got a phone call at home and told him about a disturbance on a road in McNary County. And for some reason, his wife, Pauline, whom he had married years before, rode along with him. And supposedly there was an ambush, and Pauline was killed. 1967. August the 12th. Johnny Mathis, of all people, sang a ballad about it called The 12th of August. Who knew? If you have ever studied the goings-on in McNary County, Tennessee, you'll find it to be absolutely fascinating. Because, and the reason I was reminded when I saw 12th of August, thought of the Mathis song, with the conviction today of Whitey Bulger, that trial was fascinating, I guess is one appropriate word, but it also laid bare a whole bunch of nasty undercurrents of government corruption and FBI corruption and mob activity, right? But that is not the province of bugs in Boston or guys in suits, the pants creases of which could be used to shave in New York. It also happens in places like McNary County, Tennessee. Buford Pusser, went on to die the day after he had signed a deal with Bing Crosby Productions to play himself in the sequel to Walking Tall. And I think, you know, I think for the longest time, and maybe to this day, Walking Tall held the record in the little area where I grew up for the longest run of any single movie. I mean, not Gone with the Wind, not Ben-Hur, Walking Tall with Joe Don Baker, and it ran for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and there were lines out the door almost constantly because it had everything. It had sex, it had corruption, it had gambling, it had drinking, it had lots of killing, and there it was, right there in little old McNary County, Tennessee, in the late 60s and early 70s. Buford Pusser was badly disfigured as a result of some of the things that he lived through. I remember meeting him and getting his autograph once at Gene Crump Chevrolet in Tuscumbia, Alabama. Whoa! Crazy little brain cells. Crazy. Pusser would go on to be killed on August 21st, 1974, which, of course, August the 12th, 67, you get the idea, when his up-armored Corvette hit an embankment, went flying, and Pusser was thrown from the car. A lot of people immediately decided that somebody had had retribution, although he did register a blood alcohol content of 0.18, which is pretty drunk, even in an up-armored Corvette or whatever it was. So just a little moment from history and a little reminder that the big cities don't have the lock on the big crimes. No, no. Oh, and thank you very much, Randy, for getting us started this evening. It is much appreciated. Much appreciated indeed. So, yeah, that takes us 375 now. About 37 people, $10 a piece. Thank you. Thank you very much. Kevin, writing from Colorado Springs, because it is Moran Monday on the horn. Now a brief weather report from Global Weather Deniers, Inc. The incredible record 16 days in a row rain, along with the equally incredible thunderstorm and hail we are experiencing at this very moment, along with the flash floods that are occurring, are just normal. Nothing at all to be worried about. Just because we have never, if not infrequently, have never seen weather like this in the Pikes Peak region is no cause to even think global warming is real at all. Please continue to tune into your Fox News Radio Rwanda channel for the most complete and up-to-date weather forecast, news, and climate denial there is. We, of course, would never lie to you unless we do, in which case we would never tell you to begin with. That is all. Beautiful, Kevin. Beautiful. And it encapsulates things perfectly. Hey, thanks, Sal. Sal jumping in this evening. That's awesome. 36 more folks now. And we will be in considerably better shape, and I can go into a frenzy of continued bill paying. Great. But yes, it is Monday. It is the 12th of August. And Mondays, whether they be the 12th of August or any other month, mean something around here. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. You will not believe your senses. You will not believe anything about any of the freak show you are about to witness. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Morans everywhere. Morans of the right-wing variety. Morans of the religious variety. Morans of the business variety. Morans of the ideological teabagging variety. Morans. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. For less than 5 cents per hour of Moran Monday broadcasting, well, you will be amazed. You will be shocked. You will be horrified. Behind the thin cybernetic veil of canvas that stands between you and the morans now are things that, well, we wouldn't advise little children to be exposed to. Men are urged to hang onto their wallets, women to hang onto their purses, men to hang onto their purses, and women onto their wallets if they so choose, because the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Oh, yes. Billy, with a Moran Monday nominee, jumping right out there and getting in the spirit of things. Thank you, Billy. Jen Floyd Engel of Fox Sports. Because it takes a special breed of Moran, a very special breed of Moran, to compare a privileged, wealthy, or privileged member of a wealthy family in on a college football program to, wait for it, Rosa Parks, yeah, really. Johnny Manziel of the Texas A&M Aggies is known to his fans and followers as Johnny Football. And he has recently been embroiled in controversy because a ticket broker. We used to call them scalpers. A ticket broker went to ESPN and dropped a dime on Johnny Manziel, saying that he had accepted payment for autographs. Because, you know, college athletes are supposed to be playing because of the love of the game and their cherished amateur status, and they're not supposed to be making any money because all the money in college sports is supposed to be made by the marketers and the corporatists and the dodgy, phony baloney 501c3 nonprofit organizations and occasionally the universities themselves, although the universities and colleges seldom do much more than break even if they do that. And so while there is a controversy there, goodness me, well, you check out the opening paragraph by Jen Floyd Engel. As we just back off the Moran music enough to let it run merrily in the background. Once upon a time in this country, there were ugly, racist, tyrannical rules dictating where a black person could sit on a bus. There were all kinds of these laws, actually, created and defended by the racists who benefited from them.
What kick-started change was an average everyday woman named Rosa Parks, who had grown tired of being tired. Hers was not the first protest, nor was it particularly the best. It was merely the tipping point for many Americans long since tired of these immoral laws. On a much less historically significant scale, so it is with Johnny Football. And she goes on to say, well, no, I'm not really comparing the two, after she just said, so it is with Johnny Football. So where's the part of the story where that nobody really knows, where Johnny Manziel goes to Manziel, I don't know, goes to the goes to the hills of East Tennessee and learns from longtime labor organizers how to stand up for himself. Where's that part of the story? Oh, wait. No, sorry. No, this has nothing to do with that. So the Manziel family, which is not exactly eating beans and cornbread 7 days a week, has lawyered up. And they're going to defend his Heisman and his eligibility. Hell, why not let him go pro? Well, there's money involved, right? Lots of money involved. So, you know, just putting a thank you very much, Billy, for getting us started on that. And we have a real choice crop of morons, and I mean it goes. It goes from soup to nuts. For instance, it's going to be hard to do more in Monday without a reference to BroFroMix, who says he's not quite sure. You know, we had BroFroMix on the program last week. What was he blathering about? Oh, yeah, he gets the creeps when he has to shower at the YMCA with pro-choice people. And I'm proud of the fact that I did not use the Village People's YMCA as a bumper. Sometimes you can't just go with the obvious all the time. So it was that in speaking to some group of Republicans who apparently spent their money to bring this Lulu to speak to them. Wait, was it Iowa? Was it? Why, yes, it was. It was Lyon County, Iowa. Lyon County, Iowa. Oh no. The goddess of irony is no. She had nothing to do with the fact that what you're about to hear was generated in Lyon County, Iowa, where apparently they don't have enough lion and they got to bring in the shock troops for the extra lion. Oh no. The Republican Party of Lyon County, Iowa, scraped up its pennies and its nickels and its dimes and its several $100 bills, unmarked, of course, maybe perhaps better in tens and twenties, and shuffled them off to Rick Santorum to come and talk about family values. This isn't a long clip, but by the time we're done with it, you'll feel like you've been listening to him for hours.
Use the term the other side uses.
Wait. Are we talking about framing here, Rick Santorum? Oh, dear. Rick's been trying to do deep thinking again.
Don't use the term the other side uses. Who does Barack Obama talk about all the time? The middle class. Since when in America do we have classes? Since when in America are people stuck in areas or defined places called a class? That's Marxism talk. When Republicans get up and talk about middle class, we're buying into their rhetoric of dividing America. Stop it. There's no class in America, and call them on it.
Well, God knows there's no class in Rick Santorum. He's about the most classless prick I think I've ever run across. But wait a minute, there's still Louis Gohmert and Steve King, and so maybe there's competition. Oh, dear, let's finish this. Like I said, I always already feel like I've been listening to him for a month.
America's a place where everybody has the opportunity to succeed. We believe in everybody. We are the party that values the dignity of every human life, not them.
Really? The Republicans are the party that value the dignity of human life? Bust my buttons. That must be why they ran roaring into the House of Representatives to expand access to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as food stamps. That must be why they doubled the funding for the Affordable Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. That must be why they're absolutely falling all over themselves to be a little bit more humane about issues surrounding, say, immigration or women's reproductive rights. Yeah, because they value, oh, no, never mind, they're not. He's talking about fetuses again.
Let them take what we rightly own, which is believing in every person and their ability in this country.
Thanks again to the Saints at Right Wing Watch, who go out and dig this stuff up and, I don't know, probably just getting shed of it probably involves Zen lessons and rot gut and probably various and sundry vegetable matter substances that would, yeah. There's no class in America. We are a classless society. That was one of the early lies that was told, wasn't it? You know, we're going to set up a classless society, and it's not like there's going to be any landed gentry, and then we'll have some earls, and because that's what they... No, we're not going to have any earls or dukes or barons or baronets or marquises. No knights, no... No, we're not going to have any of that. We're going to be a classless society. And frankly, the Republican Party is hard at work on creating that classless society. Did you hear the disdain in Bro Fromix's voice when he said, "What does that Obama talk about?"
The other side uses. What does Barack Obama talk about all the time? The middle class.
The middle class. The middle class. Middle class. Middle class. He talks about the middle class.
And it's a pity Bro Fromix hasn't been a longtime lurker here at the Horn. He might understand that real people desiring real change understand that, well, there is no middle class. And I, for one, have argued for the longest time that the only classes we need to be talking about are the classes of investors and workers, the coupon clippers versus the producers, the idle versus the busy. Those are the classes. It's not Catholic or Protestant or black or white or Asian or... No. No matter how much you make in any given year, if somebody is signing your paycheck, you're a worker. And as soon as people realize that, well, the problem gets a little bit clearer. The workers... are the ones who are left to protect themselves and fend for themselves, regardless of the level of remuneration.
Middle class, yeah. There's no class.
What? Did Bro Fromix come up with this after his third grasshopper with the double shot of creme de menthe? Dear God. There couldn't be... How many... What percentage of Americans will struggle with joblessness and poverty? What shocking percentage? I guess what... You know, maybe he's right. There is no class. There's just him and people like him who suck off the teat of people who work for a living or try to work for a living. And then there's the rest of us, struggling to get by from one day to the next. Isn't it interesting that Bro-Fromix is so eager to talk about a classless society, and yet at the same time, just a couple of days before, there he was creating classes and factions. Factions would be the term, having listened long, and I tried to do so attentively to Dr. Bill. You know, it's faction that people like James Madison and Alexander Hamilton are writing about in things like, well, Madison's Federalist 10. And what he perceives to be the dangerous effects of faction upon a healthy body politic. And yet, lo and behold, there was Bro-Fromix a couple of days ago standing on a rooftop like some sort of fetus-fascinated rehash of the Beatles. Maybe we could call him the Fetals. That just happened. These things just land, and you know, you just send them toddling off into the light. Was that funny? The Fetals? Steve King, Rick Santorum, Louis Gohmert, the Fetals. The song possibilities are endless if you want to get to work on the first Fetals album. But there he was blathering away about how those people who aren't ashamed, who are willing to talk about uncomfortable things in public, those people. Hello, Rick. You're creating factions, buddy. I know. You're not real sharp, and you have to use the finger under the words and sound them out silently with your lips when you're reading dense English, really information rich English like James Madison. But really, you are. So they create the factions, they created the anti-abortion movement, they created this vast rift inside the American body politic, they created the welfare queen meme, they created the idea that there are food stamp recipients out there who are living on nothing but a steady diet of Alaskan king crab legs in drawn butter. They did that. And naturally, since they did that, it must be, I'll be damned, our fault. And it goes on and on and on. There's another Moran Monday story, which arguably could be saved for Wednesday. A couple of the stories in this evening's stack could be saved for Wednesday. But they seem to fit much more tidily into the Moranity dustbin. And that's this. Beth pointed out the story of a group, a family, and I'm still trying to sort out the particulars of it. Headline: Family rescued in Pacific Probably be, maybe, I don't know, maybe expecting a little email on this in a couple of days from Tom. Family rescued in Pacific after sailing where God led us. God, having apparently led them to the middle of one of the most remote empty spaces in the entire Pacific Ocean, where they were banged into by a cargo ship that further damaged their sailboat, and eventually rescued by a Japanese cargo ship, which delivered them to Chile and the U.S. Embassy, which is now giving them a ride home. The family is the Gastonguays. I'm just reading it like I see it. Gastonguay. That's their name, Gastonguay. Questions begin to accumulate like the snowflakes that form that becomes the avalanche. A leap of faith that sent an Arizona family bound for the South Pacific in a sailboat has returned them in an airplane. After a harrowing ordeal at sea that saw them adrift and nearly out of food in one of the remotest stretches of ocean on the planet. Yeah. A leap of faith returned them in an airplane. Not we, the people of the United States, who maintain things like consulates and embassies around the world, where the Gastonguays, having been rescued from one of those remote corners of the Pacific, can... Nope, it was a leap of faith that got him on that plane. You see, what happened is Hannah Gastonguay, she's 26, and her husband Sean Gastonguay is 30, and they lived in Arizona, Stan, which is not known as being Massachusetts, you know, a bastion of liberalism and wild-eyed progressivism, where people can marry the people that they love and people can have food if they're hungry and the education system sucketh not. No, the Gastonguays, well, they were holed up in Arizona, Stan, where it's taken as read that homosexuality is evil. The Mexicans are going to take us over again, and fetuses are, ay. You get the idea. But Hannah Gastonguay and her husband Sean were, in the words of the story, fed up with abortion, homosexuality, taxes, and the state-controlled church. And so, in their own words, decided to take a leap of faith and see where God led us. God and Garmin are apparently not the same thing, because they set out, and again, we're asking a question here about a 26-year-old and a 30-year-old who are obviously religiously insane, and who, in Arizona, laid hands on a sailboat. Because I'm sorry, unless you're a freighter, you can't motorboat from wherever it is they left from, that pretty obviously couldn't be Arizona, and get to the South Pacific. We interrupt this More and Monday nomination for the first album cut from The Featles. Michael writing in. He says, sorry, I know, but the idea of The Featles kind of calls for poor taste. Cut one on Meet the Featles will be Dr. Tiller's Beating Hearts Club Band. Whew. Wow. Michael takes it pro. Right out of the blocks. All right, everybody else, get to work. We've got cut one. We'll be needing the first single. Although that really could be it. The album will be called Meet the Featles. All we have to do is figure out which one's the Ringo, which one's the Paul, which one's the George, and which one's the John, which is an insult to all four, living and dead. Rick Santorum. He's kind of the pretty one. I guess he'll have to be Paul. You take it from there. Meet the Fetals. But anyway, back to Hannah and Sean Gastonguay. Who at 26 and 30, and I know, it's not impossible. I'm the one with the sailboat fetish, okay? Well, I mean, it's not really. I just have a deep and abiding love of the things. Maybe it's because some member of my extended family, my ancestors, only got one boat ride and got it from Scotland to probably Philly. Be about 1745. Another of my ancestors got only one boat ride. Ireland to here. Maybe that's why there are so many Navy veterans in my family. I don't know. But somehow or another... And if you go to, what is it, yachtworld.com, I think, this is not a paid advertisement, you can look for used sailboats, and you can get into a, 36, 38 footer without going completely broke, and apparently that's what they did. They sold their home, apparently, and filled with their disgust with abortion, homosexuality, taxes, and the state-controlled church, but not filled with that much actual knowledge of how to operate a sailing vessel. The word yacht is overworked. It conjures up images of coal barons with things called mind games and helicopter pads and Thurston and Lovey on the Lido deck. Oh, Lovey, I wonder what the poor people in steerage are eating this evening. Yacht is an overworked word. Sailboats. Oh, they're beautiful. And there are some, and that's one of the places where there is still real and tremendously talented, meticulous, dedicated American craftspeople hard at work. Tom out in California sent me some designs by a friend of his that are truly, truly just mind-bendingly brilliant modern takes on the sailing vessel. There's a guy in Rhode Island who's been building them since 1974, and his vessels are gorgeous. The Hinckley people in Maine are doing tremendous and these things are, they can be as luxurious as you want them to be. But somehow or another, a 26-year-old woman and her 30-year-old husband got themselves into a sailing vessel, and they had, along with them, Sean Gastonguay's father and Sean and Heather's two daughters, one 3 years old and the other a babe in arms. So that's five, which is not undoable. But from landlocked Arizona, they set out to sail to Kiribati, which is, of course, its own nation now. It used to be part of the... It's the local indigenous language transliteration of Gilbert's, the Kiribati. And it takes in a part of Tarawa, and it takes in Banaba and several other islands, all of which sit at about a meter above sea level, maybe two. Kiribati, the soil, and I think Banaba... being described as some of the most unfertile soils in the entire world. Some of the worst places for agriculture in the entire world. We interrupt this story of the Gastonguays to go to the email where Ed has chimed in. His cut two on Meet the Fetals will be, we all live in an illegal abortion clinic. Very nice, Ed. Very nice. BobKincaid@gmail.com is my is the address if you should happen to want to jump in on the naming of the tunes for Meet the Featles. With Rick Santorum playing a 1958-59 Rickenbacker bass, I guess. Yeah, by the way, if you notice any changes in the chat room, it's because the chat room bill is due. So it's not working quite as it should. That's all right. Back to the Gastonguays, who it seems we cannot get out to see, and that's mainly because I'm... I guess there are people in Arizona who own sailing vessels. But they put out from... And this is the story that's not... Not necessarily adequately covered, because the story is so colorful that you just want to focus on the fact that they were disgusted with abortion, homosexuality, taxes, and the state-sponsored church, state-controlled, I'm sorry, that they felt it necessary to sail to Kiribati. And I'm curious enough that whenever I read a story that involves a really remote place like Kiribati that I'm not particularly familiar with, although I did recognize the name Tarawa, I have to go and read about it. And I did go and read about Kiribati. And Kiribati is a little tiny island nation that is very poor. And maybe if white fundies, because see these separatist, fundamentalist, usually racist weirdos pick places like Kiribati to well, we're going to go and build our little fascist wonderland. But they did. They sailed away from God knows where once they got out of Arizona and found them a boat. And spent some 91 days at sea. I don't know how long it takes to get from, I assume, Southern California or Northern Mexico's Pacific coast to a place like Kiribati. Is it 90? Is it 30? Is it 3 months? Does it take 3 months at sea in a boat, sailboat, competently handled to get that far? Yeah, they were going where God wanted them to go, Jason pointing out. Maybe God wanted them dead. Funny how they sought out humans to save them from what God wanted for them. Isn't it, though? And Michael pointing out, they were from Arizona? Oh, they were from Arizona Bay. They're awaiting the prophecy of Bill Hicks to be fulfilled, peace be upon him. The prophet, Bill Hicks. One of his great recordings was titled Arizona Bay. So, I guess it's a little too late to say I don't want to make fun of these people or make light of their troubles. But Jeebus, how damn dumb. Yeah, they set sail from San Diego for Kiribati this past May. And then they ran into foul weather. The AP news story from the Spokesman Review of Spokane, noting just weeks into their journey, the Gastonguays had a series of storms that damaged their small boat, leaving them adrift for weeks, unable to make progress. They were eventually picked up by a Venezuelan fishing vessel, transferred to a Japanese cargo ship, and taken to Chile, where they are resting in the port city of San Antonio. Mrs. Gastonguay said, "The months-long journey has been pretty exciting and a little scary at certain points." She said they wanted to go to Kiribati because we didn't want to go anywhere big. She said they understood the island to be one of the least developed countries in the world. See? Robert in Australia pointing out, I looked up Kiribati on Google Earth after reading the article yesterday. It's a few square kilometers of land with an airstrip and nothing else, and isolated isn't the word for its location. Yeah, I mean, when the folks on Rapa Nui talk about you being isolated, well. And there it is again. Gaston Guay said her family was fed up with government control in the U.S.
Of what?
As Christians, they don't believe in abortion, homosexuality in the state-controlled church. U.S. churches aren't their own, she said, suggesting that government regulation interfered with religious independence. In other words, and I'm used to decoding this bilious crap. In other words, she doesn't like the fact that preachers can't tell people that he's going to take away their ticket into heaven and exchange it for a ticket to hell if they vote for that one in our White House. Among other differences with the federal government, Mrs. Gaston Guay said they had a problem with being forced to pay these taxes that pay for abortions we don't agree with. I wonder which ones those are. Interesting. These are Christians, followers of the Prince of Peace, and yet there's nothing in this article about them taking issue with the government that forces them by taxation to pay for these brown child killing bombs that we don't agree with. They also claim that they are not members of any church. And Mrs. Gaston Guay said that the faith came from reading the Bible and through prayer. Which Bible? New International Version, New Standard Version, Living Bible, King James Version, translation of the Vulgate? Which Bible? Because they're all very much different. And I'm pretty sure, in guessing, as we have lately, that they don't read Koine Greek. Well, here's how it all shook out. The family moved in November from Ash Fork, Arizona, to San Diego, where they lived on their boat as they prepared to set sail. Holy F. Mrs. Gaston Guay said she gave birth to the couple's 8-month-old girl on the boat, which was docked in a slip at the time. At some point, now, of course, if we said that maybe this had the element of child neglect, child endangerment, if we said something like that, yeah, but you're trampling my religious freedom. Holy Jeebus. And they just wanted to go somewhere where there wouldn't be no tax. Can you imagine these Christians landing in Kiribati? How long would it take them before they started proselytizing and missionaryizing and cultifying before they had completely wrecked the place? It's kind of like a quote from our chat room moderator Lottie. You know, a lot of people have quotes from famous folks at the bottoms of their emails as sig lines. Lottie has one of his own. Hand a man a sword and he may kill another man, but hand a man a holy Bible and he will destroy civilizations. Lottie, on 26 March 2013. And it's a fact. Talk about snakes in the garden. Kiribati and the people of Kiribati are much more interested and concerned with the fact that they've already had a couple of their atolls go underwater as a result of climate change. But Lord, you can almost see the Gaston Guays now. Had they made it to Kiribati, falling on their knees and praying to God and then falling on the locals and praying on them. Mumbling in tongues and laying on hands. Healing and a prophesying. Maybe get a couple of good witch burnings going on. Now, I bring up the story of the Gaston Guays not because, oh, that's a funny story. Look at them stupid Christians. Although it is one of those kind of stories. Stupid fundies. But because it's part of a larger phenomenon. That classless society that Bro Fromix, Rick Santorum, was talking about. We don't have class here. Right? We have the truth. We value all human life. See, the Gaston Guays are the natural end point of what happens when the poison that is daily vomited forth by the likes of Rick Santorum finds its intended target. Suddenly, a couple, 26 and 30 years old, who have listened to all this anti-abortion gobblolly, find themselves selling everything they have to buy a boat and sail away from the government-controlled church. Well, you have a point, Jason. Via Twitter, Jason letting me know, I wish they'd send all the Christians to an island. That way I don't have to hear their stupid stories ever again. And Robert in Australia, with a really, really, I think, trenchant inquiry. Bob, I wonder why this family thought they'd be welcome on Kiribati. I have this image of Kiribati immigration officers telling them on their arrival to turn around and sail back to the U.S. Take your fundamentalist weirdos and go home. With a story like this, you know what the bumper's going to be, right? From the moment I read the story, I knew what the bumper was going to be. Because I read the line that they were heading for the Gilberts. They got blown off course. And again, I guess I'm just sort of deliberately conjuring Tom because, well, Tom's a sailor. You can get yourself in some real trouble out there. There's no doubt about it. But if you've only, here's the nutshell question. No irony there. I'm slain in the goddess of irony spirit. The nutshell question. Here's the question. If you're not a sailor, let's say, because I've actually mentioned this on the program. It was back when I announced that I had all those lottery numbers, one number off, and had to have that explained to me so that I wouldn't just hate myself for, you ever sit around Thanksgiving tables at 90, I ever tell you about the time we were almost rich? Yeah, one number off on all five numbers, damn it. But Scott in Sweden kindly disabused me of that sensation. Well, you know, Tom helped because I have a fascination with sailing, and yes, I've got the lottery list. We've all got it. Even if we don't play it, we've got the lottery list. The stuff we're going to do. And one of mine is sailboat and learn to sail, and airplane and learn to fly. I mean, these are frivolities. I love stuff like that, though, particularly sailboats. And, you know, Tom was telling me, he said, listen, if you want to learn to sail, you know, get into a little laser or something and just go toddling around. And that's when I found out there's practically no wind at all on the local lake. And that's why everybody's either on Sea-Doos or jet skis or in some sort of a powerboat or bass boat. But there's a process. Start out in a little laser. Learn to manage the vessel. Move up, move up, move up. These folks just jumped right into it, and I really would. I'd like a little more detail. If anybody has a story that's got more detail, what kind of a boat was this that they decided to cross the Pacific in? Did Sean Gastonguay have all of 30 years old have a previous history as a Trans-Pacific crew member? I mean, had he sailed on the what is it, the Boulevard or whatever? The races that, you know, round the horn and all that stuff. Anything? America's Cup? See, if you did this story and you took all the Jesus out of it, you'd just say that these people were not terribly bright. But because they were motivated by the infection that is religion, and in particular fundamentalist religion, because when you start talking about homosexuality, unfair taxes, government control of the state, and abortion, well, you know what, you're probably not an Episcopal or even a Lutheran. Nope. So, you know what, now that they're home, is there any introspection going on? Looking at each other saying, what were we thinking? What did you honey, what did you really hear when you said Jesus told us to get a boat and sail to Kiribati? The wife, the husband, the father. One infant and one born on the boat. It had to be terrifying. And my heart would be flooded with sympathy. It is flooded with sympathy because I'm not a monster. But even while we nurture sympathy, we can acknowledge, can we not, we can acknowledge that this was an undertaking not done under anything resembling rational circumstances, you know, because when God says, go get a boat, well, yeah, Mr. Gibson in the chat room. Brainwashing. Rinse, repeat. And no, Lottie, they didn't give the name of the manufacturer. He said, was it a Bristol or a Catalina? No, we don't know. Probably make a pretty good guess as to what sort of boat would be. I don't know, maybe the dad financed the boat. Right, and see, the questions keep piling up, and I wish the journalism was up to it. Waggy asked, wait a sec, how did they get flown home when they sold it before they left? Maybe they didn't sell it. Maybe they just had the money laying around for a boat. Oh, look, honey, here's a listing. 35-foot catch. And what a catch it is. $3,000. If you walked into that thing and the hull wasn't just sort of weeping in between the strips of duct tape, yeah, I mean, there's going to be some money involved. What, I saw a very well-made boat maybe 25 years old. 25 years old, single owner, 32-footer, meticulously maintained $85,000. Maybe that's chump change in where? Northern Arizona. I decided to take a leap of faith and see where God led us, and God led him right to the middle of the ocean. God, you gonna raise an island up now? No, really wasn't planning on it. Jason again via Twitter. Sail a boat, invade a country, kill lots of brown people. God sounds like a jerk. Well, there's a reason I refer to him as the great big great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. Hey, I'm gonna thump another one. Watch this. I'm gonna tell him I want him to sail a boat to Kiribati. They don't even know how to tie knots. Whew, this is going to be a dandy. But yeah, sympathy or no sympathy, we have to recognize that these things are the product. They don't happen in a vacuum. This is the byproduct of all the weirdo. No, we don't go to church. Well, hell, you don't have to. All you do is dial up Reverend Hagee's and starve out there on the interweb tubes, or maybe Rick Santorum. And you know, I held the baby, the little dead fetus, in my hands, and I showed it to my children, who, after they were done screaming and running away from the dead baby in my hands, I said, look, this is your baby brother. And the Muslim socialist Kenyan with the deep-seated hatred of white people, anti-colonialist, wants to take that away from us. You see, if you're just sitting around the house reading the Bible, there is no way in which you come to the conclusion that the government is oppressing the churches that exist practically every street corner. This would be a better country if there were more bars and less churches. There's no way you can come to that conclusion without somebody giving it to you who has a professional reason for wanting you to buy into it. But yeah, it was there in the news story that they were somewhere near, they were headed for the Gilberts, but wound up somewhere near the Marquesas. And the minute I saw Marquesas, I knew what the bumper was going to be. You already. Subject line, flown home from Kevin in Colorado Springs. Most likely the good people of the island flew them home. No, they never made it to the island. They never made it to Kiribati, Kevin. They were bobbing around out in one of the most remote corners of the Pacific when a Venezuelan ship found them and said, "Do you have any idea where you are? You're in the most remote corner of the Pacific Ocean." "We know. God led us here." Good for him. "You want a ride? Please." And handed them off to the Japanese cargo vessel, who then took them to San Antonio, Chile. Most likely the good people of the island flew them home at government expense just to get these people off their island. Wonder what state they're in. Seriously, think they ought to be investigated for putting their children at risk. Yeah. Of course, we would be, by doing that, we would be, of course, oppressing their freedom. Lottie in the chat room says, "Hey, I say combine the bars with the churches. They'll get way more parishioners, and I may even go back." Yeah, can I get a little McAllen 25-year-old with a Salvation sidecar. You betcha. So that's where we begin this Moran Monday. It is not where we end by any stretch of the imagination, nor are we anywhere near even remotely done. Nope. That's not the song, Randy. But, and no, it's oddly enough not a Jimmy Buffett song either. Although that's a good call. Randy and PA suggesting put your hand in the hand of the man who stilled the water. Or, as I prefer, put your hand in the hand of the man who put the water in the still. Yeah, it's just getting there. It's Moran Monday. And it's time for a break. And thanks very much again to Randy and Sal, who have us at only $365 to go to get us out of the July hole and stay even with August. Thank you very much, both of you. Anybody want to help Randy and Sal out? Much appreciated. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. Take a little break and come back. I'm Bob Kincaid. The reason I chose this, there's a line in here about the Marquesas.
Got out of town on a boat from the southern islands, sailing to reach for a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside, and the downhill run to Papeete, off the wind. This petting line of the Marquesas, you got 80 feet of a waterline. Nicely making way in a noisy bar in Avalon. I'm trying to call you, but on a midnight watch I realize why twice you ran away. Think about
how many times Cross.
Yeah, you get it now? You see? You see? I don't just do things. Southern Cross? I mean, come on, please. I was begging. God, his irony probably would have slapped me sideways if I hadn't done that. By the way, track 3 on Meet the Featles, Love is a Warm Revolver and an AK-47. And with a note also that we'll have to change the name of the White Album to, of course, the Blah Album. Well, because, after all, Rick Santorum will be our Paul. Good thoughts to all. Signed, Granny T in Tennessee. Oh, I think we've... Yeah, we may get one of them little gold paperweights out of this. Yeah, that's a song reference, too. Shh. See what happens. 2 days go by, and I'm just full of myself by the time Monday rolls around. It goes on and on and on. But since we're already in Arizona, let's stay there for a minute. Prescott, Arizona, to be precise. Let's let CBS 5 tell the story. After the ad, of course. Because there's always an ad. Yep, there it is. Had to reboot the machine right before. Time for the program. You probably already know this story, but it kind of ties together nicely.
Granite Mountain hotshot widow is gearing up for a fight against Prescott. She says her family is owed her husband's benefits, but the city says no because he was only a seasonal worker. CBS 5's Colton Schoen talked to that firefighter's wife and the city's mayor to get the straight story.
Everyone says every day it will get better, and in fact, every day it gets harder.
Julian Ashcraft lost her husband, 29-year-old Andrew Ashcraft, to the Yarnell Hill wildfire.
The fact that I have 4 small children, that now I've got to find a way to provide for them, because my husband giving the ultimate sacrifice in the city's eyes wasn't enough to seal the deal that we'll be given health benefits, that we'll be given his salary moving forward.
Julianne says the city won't pay out those benefits because Andrew was classified as a seasonal worker, but she says that wasn't the case.
He was a full-time employee. He worked full-time hours. He had a full-time responsibility. He had a full-time salary. There is no way that I can fathom how the city is justifying him as seasonal, or part-time.
Mayor Martin Kuykendall says Ashcraft's file does say he was seasonal and that his hands are tied on this issue.
That's not the elected job. We're elected to provide the policy.
Hotshot leader Eric Marsh's widow remembers her husband talking about how Prescott officials held back on Andrew when she says he became full-time.
He was very upset with the city. He was very upset with the entire city council because they made it so hard for him to get benefits for that position.
I will do anything that I can to fight for the other 13 men that they're classifying as seasonal, because they had lives and families, and they gave the ultimate sacrifice for our community.
Julianne does have a lawyer and has a few months to decide whether she'll file suit against the city, but she says she hopes she can resolve this problem without having to go there. Reporting in Prescott, I'm Colton Schoen, CBS 5 News.
And new tonight, the father of Andrew Ashcraft has launched a petition on the website change.org. He is demanding that the city of Prescott extend benefits to his son's wife and 4 children.
Okay, so to review, Arizona is a state, titularly part of the United States, which was deemed, oh dear, by the Gastingue family to be too gay, too abortion supporting, too tax imposing, and too church controlling for them to be able to tolerate to live there anymore. Meanwhile, regardless of their politics, 14 firefighters went out. They were called the hot shots. They were kind of like the Marines of firefighters, I guess you would say. Get the job done. Went out to fight a fire, and they did not come back. And because we have had a generation of legislating by upstanding Republicans like Martin Kuykendall, who is the mayor who denied the benefits, who believe in things like right to work and comp time, and see, people don't want to be tied down to a full-time job. They quietly put Mr. Ashcraft down as a seasonal or part-time employee because, you know, you only fight fires during firefighter season or firefighting season. If one breaks out and it's not firefighting season, you stay home. You just stay home and sit there in the porch swing and you burn, baby, burn, because I'm a seasonal employee. No, hell no. You leave the porch swing. You kiss your beautiful wife goodbye. You pat the three little precious children on their heads and say, Daddy's going to go put out the fire so it doesn't burn our house down. And you don't come back. And Republican Martin Kuykendall can talk about what he was or was not elected to do, but if there's any justice at all, he won't be elected mayor anymore. And this is Republican politics in action.
Well, everybody feels real bad for you, honey. But the fact of the matter is, law's the law. And your husband was a seasonal employee. And, well, I wish you well. And them three little youngins of yours, they're just as cute as buttons, and you keep them clean as a pin. And I wish you all the luck in the world finding them some health care and something to feed them, and maybe a roof to keep over their heads. Have you considered boating, honey? Take it to the Lord in prayer. Maybe he'll send you onto a sailboat to the middle of the Pacific. Pray and pray, live on hay, day by day, there'll be pie in the sky when you die. Imagine the brutal mercilessness of something like this. Arizona. Too liberal. Too liberal for the Gaston Guays. And too conservative, with a generation of conservatism to back it up, for the widow of a hero firefighter and the widows of 13 other hero firefighters who are also getting the shaft. And so Mr. Ashcraft's dad has put a petition on change.org. Hoping to get the, what is it, 25,000 signatures he needs to get a response. Not yes, but just a response from the White House. Jason via Twitter. In Florida, we thank Thor for Arizona. They make us look good. Okay, well, maybe just they make us look a little better. Oh, see, now Jason, that's what happens when you go and tweak the goddess of irony on her. On her little ear top. She hates that. I guess you saw that this past Friday was Shooting Gun Appreciation Day at all the Starbucks all across America. Because Starbucks is gun friendly. You know where this is going, don't you? Yeah. Florida, that's where this is going. Sorry, Jason. You walked into that one. Now, Gun Appreciating Day at Starbucks, was on Friday. It was Saturday then, that 51-year-old Pamela Beck decided she needed a venti mocha caramel macchiato latte half calf with soy foam. You know, for about $6. And she went wandering into her St. Petersburg, Florida Starbucks, where they appreciate gun owners. And you can pack your heat while you're in there getting a cup of overpriced, over-roasted Joe any day of the week that they're open. But right before she went to Starbucks in St. Pete, she had a fashion crisis, 51-year-old Pamela Beck did. And she realized she was not properly accessorized and she needed a different bag. She was heading out to Tyrone Square Mall, and the purse she was carrying just wouldn't do. So she wanted a different purse, and she reached in the closet and got it, but she done forgot that the gold-plated 25 caliber handgun her daddy had done given her last year and that she stuck in that bag for protecting purposes, you know, for protecting herself and standing her ground and protecting freedom, Wolverines, was in said bag, and took her bag and went off, just because, you know, when you gotta have a venti mocha caramel macchiato half calf latte with soy foam on it, you gotta have it right then. So she did not notice the 25 caliber, no kidding, gold plated 25 caliber revolver. Well, I don't know, it was a revolver, maybe it was a semi-auto. 25 caliber probably was semi-auto. And so she was meeting up with her friend, and they were going to, you know, they were going to share a coffee. And so what happened is she dropped her bag. And when she dropped her bag, the freedom protecting firearm that she was going to be a standing her ground with in one hand while her venti mocha caramel macchiato half calf latte with extra soy foam in the other, well, while it was still in the bag, the pistol discharged, went off, shot, and shot her buddy in the leg. The news report noting that the injury was not life threatening. Okay. Got shot trying to go get a cup of coffee at Starbucks in St. Petersburg, Florida. But, you know, it wasn't a life-threatening injury because, well, no harm, no foul. Or little harm, little foul. Starbucks immediately issued a corporate headquarters press release, Sweat Condition Alpha. At Starbucks, the safety and security of our partners, who are our employees and customers, is our top priority. You hear that? You hear that? When you just get that overwhelming urge for a venti mocha caramel macchiato half-calf latte with extra soy foam, you're not just a coffee customer, you're a partner of Starbucks. The safety and security of our partners, who are also our employees and customers, is our top priority. We are aware of the accident that took place, and we are thankful that nobody was seriously injured and that nobody has yet served suit papers on us, although we've already got the lawyers on that. We're lawyered up real good at Starbucks. I remember on the day of September 11th, 2001, when Starbucks was gouging for water. Sort this one for me, if you can. I'm open for it. What is it about Starbucks that makes you feel like you need to pack heat?
simple question. Why can Starbucks... Why does Starbucks... Your firearm is welcome at Starbucks. Can't bring in your dog. Firearm's great, though. Whoop! Then in Houston, Texas, of course, a much sadder story. Over the weekend, a man's wife gave birth to a precious little child. After the baby had been born, arguing was heard coming from the room of the new mother and the father. And the father pulled out a pistol and blew his brains out. One hopes the newborn was by then in the nursery. One hopes no one will ever tell the newborn what daddy did the day the newborn was born. The hospital where this happened is supposed to be a gun-free hospital, a firearm-free hospital. But, you know, just ask Wayne LaPierre, he'll tell you, the only thing that will stop a bad suicidal new daddy with a gun is a good homicidal new daddy with a gun. The calculus is getting weirder and weirder and weirder. More in Monday. Back in St. Petersburg, Florida, the police have considered Pamela Beck's shooting her buddy to have been accidental. But the Pinellas County State Attorney's Office has the case file because she didn't have a concealed carry permit for her gold-plated 25 caliber pistol that she put in the bag that she really needed that day. And I'm not going to do the rest of the gun stories that go with that story. Just not. Because there's a bunch of them. Back to the set list or the album list for the Meet the Featles. Marty suggesting that Ringo be that our Ringo be Rand Paul.
Aqua Buddha.
Yeah. Dr. John jumping in. While my Savior gently weeps, I want to hold your hand unless you're gay or black, and drive my car, but only to church and Luby's. This may wind up being a double album. Michael, continuing onward. It's a double album now. All you need is birth. Can't buy me contraception. Happiness is a warm transvaginal probe. Vaginal mystery tour. Lucy in the jar with fetus. Oh, my God. Lucy in the jar with fetus. Maxwell's silver coat hanger. While my legitimate rate... I don't know if we got enough toasters. While my legitimate rape victim gently weeps. Oh. Meet the Featles. Michael apologizing, saying, I know, these are very dark, sorry, but they're... Yeah, they are, but they're also real. All you need is birth. What? No. Because that's basically where they are. What, you want to eat? Photo coming in from Steve. I know it's not church night, but I thought I'd remind people of what Jesus said about LGBT people in light of the Kiribati crew. Photograph. Sign. White signboard. As Jesus said about gay people, quotation marks, nothing, period, quotation marks. Yeah. I think we'll start off side three of album number two of the of what is now a double album set, Meet the Featles, with a track from Marty. It's been a hard day's night protesting the abortion clinic. Oh, thanks, Dr. John. When Utah Phillips, Requiescat in Pace, sang it, there was another line, usually somewhere between a stress and a snarl. There'll be pie in the sky when you die. That's a lie. Is that traditional? I love it. Joe Hill wrote the original, and I don't know. It rhymes, though, and it scans, and it certainly does work. Good God, we're halfway through this Moran Monday. And just a reminder, this is, yes, really, Conversation Radio. And you are welcome to bring your own nominations to the fore. The number is 304-658-3333. On the Skype, Skype handle is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And if we have never conversed on the Skype before, just send me a contact request. I'll okay it, and away we'll go. And if we already are, feel free to chime in. This stuff just, it goes on and on and on. But under the rubric that sometimes we don't notice the good stuff because there's so much crazy stuff, and bang, proof. Well, not bang, but there you have it. The guy and gals, or whatever. A bit of a happy story, and I'm guessing this guy is not going to be in the bishoping business for very long. Down in St. Petersburg, Florida, apparently where he was not in danger of being shot by the concealed 25 caliber gold-plated pistol of Pam Burke, age 51 of St. Pete, over at the Tyrone Square Mall or what have you. There's a guy, like I said, by the name of Bishop Robert Lynch, and he apparently has a blog. Everybody's got a blog. Everybody blogs but me. For His Friends, Thoughts and Reflections by Bishop Robert Lynch. And on that blog, a few days back, he responded to a group of goobs that go by the moniker of Population Research Institute. You would think that Population Research Institute might have something to do with population concerns. You would, of course, be wrong, because Orwellianism is the anti-abortion movement's patron saint. And they decided, of all the people to go after, they decided to go after Catholic Charities, which of course receives great big horse gagging loads of money from you and me, taxpayers. What are they upset with Catholic Charities about? The Population Research Institute? They are accusing Catholic Charities of providing contraceptives in Africa and working alongside family planning groups. Got it? Yeah. Enter Catholic Bishop Robert Lynch of St. Petersburg. And you got to give people credit when they are due credit, when they get something right. You can't always tell them that they need to do better. And so I'll give credit here to Bishop Robert Lynch. He wrote the following, and this is, I don't know, I think this is on a par with maybe some medieval pope admitting that maybe Galileo was right. Bishop Robert Lynch said, "I am convinced that many so-called pro-life groups are not really pro-life, but merely anti-abortion." This is actually a significant distinction. Because if all in the world you're worried about is abortion, you're not pro-life. He noted in this blog post, for instance, that these groups that are allegedly pro-life are notoriously silent when it comes to the government executing people for crimes that are either real or dummied up, and we know that a bunch of them are dummied up. But they, for instance, you know, will be, what he pointed out, Bishop Lynch, is that a man named John Ferguson, 65 years old, paranoid schizophrenic, thus profoundly, severely mentally ill, was recently executed by the state of Florida via what I like to call horizontal crucifixion, otherwise known as lethal injection. This happened, by the way, a week ago today. John Ferguson, 65 years old, was, you know, killed by the state in the name of the people. Lynch wrote, "Many priests grow weary of continual calls to action for legislative support for abortion and contraception-related issues, but nothing for immigration reform, food aid, and capital punishment." Because it must be borne in mind that it is standing policy of the Roman Catholic Church to oppose the death penalty. And for a faith that grew up out of a death cult and a martyrdom cult, that's a pretty big leap. And it has to be commended. Because once you get around all the angels dancing on a head of a pin issues, when you get right down to it, being murdered in the name of the state is a pretty rotten thing to have happen to you, especially if you're innocent or not guilty. We had that discussion. And it's probably the one instance in which if you did it unto Jesus, if you did it unto the least of these, you did it unto Jesus, except for the fact that it is. If you want to get down and wallow around in theology, every time we execute somebody in this country, in Texas or Florida or God knows where, if you buy into it all, we're re-executing Jesus. Get on up there. Hey, give me a nail. Yeah, give me that INRI sign again. Yeah, we know what that stands for. I'm nailed right in. So that's a pretty big deal. To have this bishop call right-wing or them, yeah. Hypocrites. Bishop Lynch wrote, "Unfortunately, a storm of a different kind developed in the United States recently and was headed toward Africa. It began with a group called the Population Research Institute, which is an allegedly pro-life group, and spread to a few other notoriously and consistently wrong entities who thrive on attacking the church or its entities." Well, I don't thrive on it, but I'm not going to shrink from it either. You know, stop screwing little boys and we'll get on a lot better. "While it was meant to inflict harm on a highly respected U.S. Catholic charity, it took dead aim this time at Africa. From time to time, I suspect when these organizations need money, They try to stir up a hornet's nest or storm by attacking a Catholic organization, usually falsely accusing them of being anti-life, pro-contraception, either pro or soft on abortion, etc., etc., etc. Those three et ceteras are the bishops, not mine. The storms start small enough and then occasionally grow in size. It's simply a money-raising scheme. Look, with little regard for the human lives with which they allege they seek to protect. Well, maybe it's only pre-born human life. Listen to this. Listen to this. This is a Catholic bishop. Maybe it is only pre-born human life in which they are interested. The Catholic Campaign for Human Development has felt the buffeting torrents of accusations in the past, as has Catholic Charities USA. This time it was Catholic Relief Services, which was to be the significant whipping boy, girl, for these groups. Whipping boy slash girl is in quotes. For 12 years of my priestly life, I have been on the board of Catholic Relief Services, and six of those I served as president and chairman of the board. During my engagement, we were mostly spared any of these storms, but from the time Cardinal Timothy Dolan succeeded me as chairman, these storms have developed off the east coast of the U.S. and moved eastward toward Africa, where CRS does an amazing job of supporting and sustaining human life, even with programs of prenatal maternal child health care, which has helped lower the infant in and out of the womb death rate. So, by way of diffusing an ugly situation, he says, does CRS staff or the agency in general promote contraceptives in Madagascar or anywhere else in Africa or the globe? The storm originators never identify their sources but just throw mud up into the air. CRS policy is consistent and supportive of the church's teaching, and we have been excluded from many U.S. government programs over the years because we will not sign on to the U.S. program of condom distribution. Okay, so, you know, they are still stuck on stupid, but I get his point. If your idea of being pro-life is preventing people on a continent absolutely ablaze with HIV from being able to put a little latex thingy on their, well, you know, your idea of pro-life is pretty twisted. So what probably does happen, he points out that Catholic Relief Services has about 5,000 employees worldwide. He says it's even remotely possible that one or two of those same employees might incorrectly represent the agency's position. Well, heck, there may be one or two that are actually passing out condoms and saving a few actual lives, being pro-life by passing out condoms. Maybe. But the Population Research Institute, oh, please tell me, where's the about? Yeah, okay. I just love these. Who we are, the Population Research Institute, putting people first for 20 years. Before that, who knows who they were putting first. The Population Research Institute is a non-profit research group, sure you are, whose goals are to expose the myth of overpopulation. Wait, what? I do. I hear it. I just heard Dr. John start screaming. I heard Kate. Yeah, that's Kate. She's screaming. Yeah, this is better than Romper Room. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that Beth? Oh, yeah, that's Beth screaming. Expose the myth of overpopulation. Because that's what it is. Just like global warming. Overpopulating the planet is a myth. Oh, there's plenty of room. Look at all that wide open spaces. Look at all those places that don't have any damn water. We can put some people there. Whose goals are to expose the myth of overpopulation, to expose human rights abuses committed in population control programs, and to make the case that people are the world's greatest resource. No, see, when you start treating people as resources, you got a problem. Because they're not resources. They're people. And, of course, now there will be a terrible, terrible conniption over the, what is it now, 30 genetically modified humans that are out there? Now, on the planet, that was announced, yesterday, the day before? Yeah. Our growing global network of pro-life groups spans over 30 countries. Oh, there's all kinds of... Our mission. Debunk the myth of overpopulation, which cheapens human life and paves the way for abusive population control programs. That's right. Breed up, China! Get with it! There aren't enough of you! Oh, no, no. We realize you're already in an absolute existential struggle for your continued existence. We get that. But the Population Research Institute wants you to know that overpopulation is a myth that they have debunked. So get all rabbity with it. I mean, let's have a few more billion over there. No, actually, that's not what they mean. Because when outfits like this come along, they're not talking about population generally. Because there is an inherent racial bias inside all of these organizations. They're talking about the world doesn't have enough white people. Expose the relentless promotion of abortion, abortifacient contraception, and chemical and surgical sterilization in misleadingly labeled population stabilization, family planning, and reproductive health programs. Defund these programs by exposing the coercion, deception, and racism inherent in them. Except the only place where there's inherent racism is at the Population Research Institute. But, you know, who's counting? So, good for Bishop Lynch. I hope never to see a news story that talks about the day that he offered a Snickers and a Coke to a little boy in a confessional. I really hope I never see that. I'd like to think there's at least one out there now who isn't doing it. And bully for him for noting that the Population Research Institute, with all its concern for the dignity of human life, doesn't give a rat's ass about a 65-year-old mentally ill man that got horizontally crucified a week ago today at some hellhole prison in Florida, Stan. Good for him. Back to Starbucks for a minute. Robert writes in from Australia. Starbucks opened lots of shops in Australia a few years ago. There are approximately 6 shops left, mainly in tourist areas. It wasn't real coffee, and no one liked it. You know, Starbucks began with an entrepreneurial type buying a bunch of ruined, over-roasted, burned-up beans. Isn't that the story? Yeah, well, across the river, it's really hard to get a cup of decent decaf anywhere but here at home. Don't send me the notes about the decaf. You've already called me all in. Sissy! Caffeine, sissy! Go ahead, Bob. Have a cup. We'd love to hear you after 2 or 3 cups on and getting on the air. No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't understand a blessed word out of my mouth. It'd all just be a high-pitched squeal. It all just runs together with me and caffeine. I've slowly weaned myself onto it again by being able to drink a little bit of green tea now and then. This is about as perky as you want me, trust me. But I can go across the river to Fayetteville, where there's a lovely little place called the Cathedral Cafe. And their coffee is all fair trade. And they're really friendly, nice local people. And the profits they make from selling a cup of coffee or what turns out to be an absolutely delightful breakfast quesadilla with chorizo and... Oh, yummy, never mind. Well, it stays in the local community. How's about that? Yeah, I don't care much for Starbucks either. And you know, it would be nice if we all just sort of said to Starbucks, okay, you've chosen the gun owners. I hope it works out for you. The rest of us, normal people, not walking around paranoidly packing heat, will be buying our coffee somewhere else. We don't have to tell them that the coffee sucks in the first place. But we can, yeah, we can sure tell them that. Quite the filibobster I've got going on here. And there's plenty more. plenty more. Just have to clear it. Yeah. I see. Oh, there it is. Isaac has taken it as his mission in life to just sort of mess with me. In a good way. In a fun way. Via Twitter. At Bob Kincaid. I would love to hear you high on the radio for one show. Is that doable? LOL. Depends on the definition. But then, I made a promise. No, I mean, if you want to listen to somebody with his brain sideways on dope, what are you, on dope? Turn on Limbaugh. Turn on Beck. Now, I made a promise a very long time ago that I would not do impaired radio. Except now that I'm fooling around with that dangerous gateway drug, caffeine. Weed, okay, weed. I understand, Isaac. No, it was. I didn't think you wanted me to do crack night on the horn. I can't even imagine that. No, somehow I don't think that's doable. But I appreciate the impulse. By the way, a little journalism moment. This shouldn't take too terribly long. There was a protest in Washington, D.C. today. The protest was outside the headquarters of the United States State Department. The story to which I refer is via Agence France-Presse, and it says simply some 200 people staged a sit-in outside the U.S. State Department Monday, demanding that U.S. President Barack Obama stop the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. Okay, good. I'm right there. I got that, and had we been doing ache stuff in D.C., and had I known about it, I might have gone down and just held a sign myself. Because I want that miserable piece of crap stopped. Yeah, but then we won't get the oil, and China will. Heard that just last week, didn't we? But we have our little journalism moment comes from the following statement, second paragraph. Activists from environmental groups and civil society organizations held placards and shouted, "President Obama, stop the pipeline." Again, I'm not trying to deliberately or negligently be an ass about this, but would it be too much to ask who the constituent groups were? Was it 350? Was it Sierra? NRDC? Rainforest Action Network? Civil Society Institute? Tides Foundation? Who? Then we finally get a quote from Elijah Zarlin. "We expect to see here what we have been seeing all across the country, which is citizens coming in, sitting in, risking arrest to urge the State Department and President Obama to finally reject the Keystone XL pipeline," Elijah Zarlin, one of the sit-ins organizers, told AFP. The protest was held without incident. Am I getting this wrong? Would it be nice to know who it is that's leading this sit-in or participating in this sit-in? I generally support these kinds of things. You got to draw attention, and hey, thanks very much to Agence France-Presse for covering this, because I'm betting it ain't going to make, I mean, it won't make page A17 of the New York Times if it goes that far. Doubt it'll be in USA Today. I bet it won't be in it won't be in the Washington Post. And it goes on, and it, you know, Republican House Speaker John Boehner, however, said the project would create tens of thousands of jobs. John Boehner is, of course, drunk. Obama has previously put off a decision on the pipeline, waiting for the results of a study on the pipeline's environmental impact. Okay. During a talk on climate change on June 25th, Obama said the pipeline should go forward only if this project does not significantly exacerbate the problem of carbon pollution. And then, of course, the oil-sodden fiends get the last word in this article. Supporters of Keystone XL insist that it would have a negligible impact on the environment until it ruptured. Somewhere on Facebook today, I saw that TransCanada is now advertising, no kidding, the Keystone XL pipeline as a solar installation. Really? I'm not joking. Saw the ad. But now that leaves a little bit to be desired. I'd like to know who led the protest, who participated in the protest, was anyone arrested? It says the protest was held without incident. Did anybody get hauled off? I'm looking at a photograph of it here. I see a lot of white folks. Short sleeves, short pants. Signs that say stop the Keystone XL pipeline. Huh, maybe that's the group. Credo. Maybe it was a Credo action. Credo apparently paid for the signs. Because Credo's name, you know, Credo Mobile, the cell phone company, their name's plastered all over the signs. So maybe it was Credo. Maybe this was a function of Credo action, and in which case, more power to them. They do good things, Credo action. Still, I would rather like to not be guessing at that, you know? Morons everywhere. Going to the phones in a minute, 304-658-3333. Skype line is Bob Kincaid Horn. I had a note from Kate right before airtime. Subject line, just asking. There is alarming news coming to the fore regarding Japan. If you dig deep enough through the garbage and rubbish, you will find that we are in for some interesting times. We seem always to be so, Kate. We're getting nothing from media here. Isn't it about time we got some updates? I don't have any saved links, but you have more powerful equipment and possibly more patience. Tim sent in a moving post last week. Maybe you could collaborate with him. Thanks for the ice cream hot sauce reference last week. I was a little surprised at Sergi's scoffing at instructions on appliances. Millions are culturally illiterate in this country, Kate notes, have never had electric appliances, and some don't have a floor substantial enough to support a refrigerator, nor a waterbed. Who has those anymore? Oh, there's still a few of them out there. But no, I get that point. Right down to, once you've done everything, don't forget to plug it in. I do get that. So thanks, Kate. Yeah, there is a Fukushima update, and we will get to it in short order. Also, this coming in from Bob from Baltimore. Nomination for Moran Monday. It's almost pointless to nominate Louis Gohmert and Donald Trump for this honor, since they qualify as ex officio members for life in any society of morons. Today's nomination should rather go to those who book for them during Sunday talk shows. Who book them for Sunday talk shows. This week with Judas Stephanopoulos was particularly nauseating because of these personages. And what Bob from Baltimore is talking about is the fact that No, really. The best that in the August heat, the best that the folks at ABC could find for yesterday's This Week with George Snuffleupagus were Donald Trump, Louis Gohmert. It was particularly fun when Louis Gohmert said that he is the final arbiter. Screw Marbury versus Madison. Louis Gohmert is the final arbiter of what the Constitution means. Sadly, there were no references to Alaskan King Crab Legs or Asparagi. More's the pity. So, no, really. Meet the Prestitutes had Steve King. But the Meet the Prestitutes one is a beauty. Because on Meet the Prestitutes, Steve King actually, no kidding, got slapped down. And not by Rachel Maddow or somebody. He got slapped down by a campaign consultant from his own party. Really? Check it out. The person calling him down is Anna Navarro. Uh-oh, got one of them names ends in a vowel. Steve King don't like her much, I'll bet you.
Proposes to legalize a lot of people. It'll include the people who are drug smugglers up to the age of 35. You cannot do a background check on people that don't have a legal existence in their home country. And the people that are advocating for this don't understand the full scope. So it's time we had a national debate on what really happens with this. My heart goes out to valedictorians who were brought in here by their parents. So does everybody's in America. But we cannot put our sympathies for people in that condition greater than our love for the rule of law or the sovereignty of the United States of America. That is the debate, and that's why it didn't pass back in 2006 and 2007. The American people rose up, and I think they'll rise up again and put a stop to this and restore the rule of law, David.
Congressman King, thank you very much for joining us from Iowa this morning. It gets us back to the roundtable and the immigration debate. Anna, what does this say to you about the prospects of real reform coming out of the House?
I think Congressman King should go get himself some therapy for his melon fixation. I think there might be medication for that. I think he's a mediocre congressman who's got no legislative record, and the only time he makes national press is when he comes out and says something offensive about the undocumented or Hispanics. And frankly, I think he's being helpful to the immigration debate because it is emboldening other Republicans to speak out strongly against him. People like John Boehner, like Eric Cantor, like Paul Ryan. We're not going to stand anymore for the Republican Party being defined by somebody like Steve King. There are other voices who are the adults in the room and who are working hard towards a reform, and I think it's going to happen. I'm more optimistic than most.
Let me, before I let him go, he just...
Now, I want to correct the record on something here. Ms. Navarro, who is a Republican, so I probably have about as much in common with her as I do with, you know, Satan. Satan! There we go. In this case is absolutely correct, with one exception. She says that the only time he makes national press, Steve King being he, is when he comes out and says something offensive about the undocumented or Hispanics, and that is simply not true. Because he also makes the national press when he comes out and says something hateful about gay people. He cut his teeth saying hateful things about gay people, like how America would be a better place if all the gay people would just go back in the closet, and about how God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And of course, he gets national media attention when he gets all worked up about the fetuses. Maybe he could do fill-in work like, he could do the side work like Billy Preston did on Let It Be. And he can be a member of the Fetals, too. I like the idea of Rick Santorum on bass and Rand Paul on drums, but we still got to work out our John and our George. But no, the fact of the matter is Steve King gets lots of press whenever he says something hateful about, you know, hey, he got, hasn't he said hateful thing about people wanting to, poor people wanting to continue to eat food? I think so. So let us let Ms. Navarro wrap up.
Heard that. Congressman King, do you want to respond to that in terms of what actually is going to get accomplished?
You're going to love this. Naturally, Steve King, having just had Ms. Navarro look, I got an ass in my hand. Is this yours? He gets to respond. And what a response this is.
Well, I would say this. First of all, I spoke only of drug smugglers. And if Anna understands the language, she should know that. I didn't insult her.
If Anna understands the language, she should know that. I didn't insult her. Well, maybe not before, but you just did, Steve. If Anna understands the language. Donde está mi bourbon? Donde está mi psilocybin mushrooms? If Anna understands the language. Oh, please. But that's okay. She's pretty quick.
I didn't insult other Republicans, and I didn't violate the 11th commandment that Reagan gave to us. And so we should...
I'm not undocumented, Congressman. I vote. Ooh! And yet we come back to that same old thing that we come back to time and time and time again, in which we wonder if the people out in his district in Iowa we wonder if they sit there and go, God, isn't there anybody? Or if they say, you know, he's right, I've seen them, they got calves like cassava melons. Oh, and Jude with an answer for us regarding the sit-in in D.C. via eNewsPF. Activists will stage a sit-in and a protest at the State Department building in Washington, D.C. today, August 12th, in opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline. The sit-in is the second planned act of civil disobedience that Credo, Rainforest Action Network, and the other 98% have staged this summer to maintain pressure on the president to keep his promise to fight climate change by rejecting the Keystone XL pipeline. So, hey, I was right. Credo and Rainforest Action Network. I didn't know about the other 98%. But enough of that. Let's go to the phones, 304-658-3333 or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
Kevin, what's happening?
Not much. I just wanted to make my Monday Morian nomination. And I'm surprised you didn't mention her. Australia, Sarah Palin.
Yes. Yes, she bowed out, right?
Well, she bowed out when she declared that Islam was a country.
Well, yeah, we had that last week.
Yeah, but...
But she just over the weekend, she got out of the race.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't you if... You said something as stupid as Islam is a country?
Well, no, because in the United States, that kind of stuff will get you elected. It was inspiring to see that she bowed out of the race in Australia because apparently, well, it's not just that. She may have charges lodged against her, and in that case, she's ineligible to run anyway.
What are the charges for? I didn't hear about that.
She was charged with tampering or defacing or vandalism or something. She was running around in the grocery store with a bunch of stickers that said, "Halal supports terrorism," or Islam supports terrorism. And she was putting her little stickers on all the products she could find that had the halal mark on it, which means that it's, you know, okay to be eaten by Muslims. It's usually right there, right, side by side with the kosher marking.
Right, yeah. I remember that now. I didn't know she got charged with it, though. I knew there was a big uproar in Australia over her doing it. But, yeah, I guess I'm a little bit late because I just heard about her saying this over the weekend. So, you know, but still, I think, like you said before, Gohmert and people like Perry and Gohmert just, you know, they automatically get the award every week. Ex officio, don't know what else you call them. Who was the one, do you remember which one it was that, it was the guy from Oklahoma, I was trying to think of his name, that said, talked about the fetal masturbation.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, I was trying to look that up. And speaking of clowns, another one, I think you might have mentioned this, the clown in Missouri, literal clown that mocked President Obama over the weekend.
Yeah.
It's that story. Yeah, that guy.
By the way, the fetal masturbation guy is Michael Burgess.
Well, yeah, that's
the vice chairman of the House Subcommittee on, just a minute here, House Subcommittee focused on public health and biomedical issues. It always works out that way. But yeah, in Missouri, the rodeo clown with the Obama mask on.
Yeah.
And the announcer. Yeah, this guy, I'm glad you mentioned it, Kevin, because this guy really does deserve a mention. The Kansas City Star reporting what happened at the Missouri State Fair rodeo, in which a rodeo clown wearing a Barack Obama mask went into the ring. The Kansas City Star, pull quote, "The announcer wanted to know if anyone would like to see Obama run down by a bull. The crowd went wild. He asked it again and again, louder each time, whipping the audience into a lather. One of the clowns ran up and started bobbling the lips on the mask, and the people went crazy. Finally, a bull came close enough to him that he had to move, so he jumped up and ran away, to the delight of the onlookers, hooting and hollering from the stands." This is, of course, in Sedalia, Missouri.
Yep. Yeah, and I heard also they did that he did a few things with a broomstick, which we won't mention here, but that was just tacky, and I don't even know if it's worthy of a Warren nomination. There needs to be an award for just general overall tackiness, but then we'd have the same people getting those awards too. So
week after week after week,
you can't get away from them. They're all over. Hey, I was proud of my native Floridians. The woman in the Starbucks with the gun, and the other guy, you know, some good press for Florida. So. Anyway,
well, you never know when you're going to need your 25 caliber gold-plated pistol that Daddy gave you for standing your ground.
Well, he might need that, you know, in Starbucks. That's a pretty rough crowd in the Starbucks from what I hear. So, you know, that's why they allow him to carry those guns in there.
Well, you know, people get jacked up and jazzy on caffeine. And what'd you say about my mama?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know. Anyway, that's all I had. I just
Well, you will be pleased to know, Kevin, that the Republican Lieutenant Governor of Missouri, Peter Kinder, got on Twitter and said, "I condemn the actions disrespectful to POTUS the other night. We are better than this."
Yeah, I noted that. Surprisingly, quite a few Republicans have come out condemning that. But
apparently racist jokes by rodeo clowns are one of the things. Because last year in California, a joke was made by a guy named Mike Hayhurst that Playboy had offered Mitt Romney's wife, Ann, $250,000 to pose nude for Playboy, but Michelle Obama got a $50 offer from National Geographic.
Yeah, I remember that too. That was another low light. You know, I don't even know what to say anymore with these people. It just seems like, for you and me, for our generation, we were raised, at least I was, after about seventh grade, I went to public schools, and it was no big thing to go to school with people of various colors. And I for the life of me, don't understand it. It's like the people you were just talking about up there, in Steve King's area, talking, you know, him saying, making the remark about the Cavs, and I'll almost promise you, they probably have never seen a Hispanic. They just take Steve King's word for it. And that's
well, no, they probably have, because, for instance, in a place called, I believe, Postville, Iowa, some years back, there were lots of undocumented immigrants. They were being worked as slave labor at a kosher meat butchery there.
Yep.
The slave master in question was a fellow by the name of Shalom Rubashkin.
Nice.
Oh, but I do have a little more. I have a little more Florida press for you, Kevin. If you want.
Oh, good.
Are you ready for this? So over the weekend, President Obama traveled to Orlando.
Yep.
To give an address. Where the teabag and 50 teabaggers, you know, 200 decent human beings showed up at the State Department to try to stop a nightmare pipeline that could positively F the entire continent, if not the globe.
Yep.
Well, 50 teabaggers showed up in Florida with signs, among others, that said, "Kenyan, go home," and holding "Impeach Obama" signs and "Obama lies" signs.
Well, there's a sinkhole there in Orlando too now, so maybe we can get those people paired up with the sinkhole and, you know, fill in the sinkhole at the same time we get rid of the people. That would be
nice. How do you know they didn't climb out of it in the first place?
Well, that isn't
they're teabaggers.
That is entirely possible. I just go away, shut up, unless you're going to do something constructive, because it's original to hold up a sign that says, "Impeach Obama." You know, that hasn't been done maybe a million times so far.
And you know what? You'll love this, Kevin. There is a Republican congressman. And he's a real handful too. By the name of Representative Blake Farenthold, Farenthold. He is, of course, a teabagging or pig licking. He is, of course, from Texas, and he was speaking in Luling, L-U-L-I-N-G, Luling, Texas. And he said that the House of Representatives would impeach Barack Obama in a minute.
Oh yeah.
But he said, it wouldn't be any point to it, because it'd be just like that Bill Clinton, and he'd get away with it because they wouldn't convict him in the Senate. He said, as a result of impeaching President Clinton, we've redefined what sex is to a lot of our young people, and we've said it's okay to lie to Congress. Actually, I think that whole lying to Congress thing got the imprimatur of approval maybe during the Nixon administration. And certainly during the Reagan administration, but if you're Blake Farenthold, those don't count because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R.
Well, Ollie North did not lie to Congress. He was railroaded and convicted, and there was absolutely no truth to the fact that of what he did, you know, just because it was documented every step of the way, and As far as the Nixon thing, well, that was just that vast left-wing conspiracy. That got
Nixon wasn't any different from anybody else. He just got caught. I've heard that a million times, but I've heard it once. Yeah.
Yep. So.
What's interesting about Blake Farenthold of Luling, Texas, is that while he says he's willing to he'd impeach Barack Obama in a minute, he didn't say anything about grounds, which leads me to think that impeachment based upon skin color is probably just fine by the lights of Blake Farenthold.
Well, that's what I was assuming the charge would be, presiding while black. That's legal somewhere, I'm sure, but apparently not in America. Like I said, these people do a wonderful job of keeping my support for the president high, because every time I get a little upset at him, they come out and say something really stupid, and, I'm kind of forced. Well, not forced, but you know what I mean. It just kind of makes me realize that things could be a lot worse. We could have Mittens as president, or, and this is a one for Wednesday, but I got to mention it. Apparently over the weekend, former President Bush said God told him to invade Iraq. Did you hear about that one?
Well, he said it when he was invading Iraq. I guess he just doubled down.
Yeah, he doubled down on that, and, of course, still perpetuating trying to perpetuate the myth that it was a good thing that we had invaded Iraq. And, if you ever do something like a telethon, Bob, you don't need to worry, because you've got enough material for a month. 24/7.
Every blessed day.
Yep.
I mean, this is August, Kevin. This is supposed to be the slow news time.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a station here in Denver that used to run a bumper commercial that said, "What next?" It was a news station, so, what's going to happen next? Well, they ended up stopping running that because "what next" was almost occurring every day. I mean, it was ridiculous. And it's that way now. Bob, I wrote you about that storm the whole time it was happening. I was talking to my cat, who amazingly wasn't scared at all, wanted to look out the window, but I was saying, I've never seen anything like this. And I haven't. It's just, it was 16 days in a row now we've gotten rain, and not...
Well, and we've been in monsoon season here, too.
Well, yeah, but this is not monsoon for us. This is monsoon plus. I mean, we had two people killed. For those who don't know, when you get off the interstate, I-25 here, you head west toward the mountains. And just after you get off 25, it cuts through a mountain on your way to Pikes Peak. Well, that's where that flooding was this past weekend, where one person got killed and two were missing. And it's flooded before, but they were talking about the flooding this time was up to people's chest. And this guy that got killed, they don't know how he got killed. They don't know if he got out of his car or if he was in his car and got trapped, because they found his body like 100 feet away from the car. But it's just, you're seeing things. It's like you said the other day, and I forget, how did you say it? Weather is an outcropping of climate change, or vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, weather is not the same as climate change, but extreme weather events are a symptom of it.
Right. And that's what I believe we're seeing here myself. I grew up in Florida, and to not have any tropical storms of any note by this time of year that have even been on your radar, that is extremely unusual. And the possibility of us getting a lot of storms later in the year down in Florida is very real. But it just, you know, by now, we've at least, down when I was down in Florida, you'd be following something. It may not hit Florida, but, you know, you'd be checking the news to find out the progress of the storm, find out which way it was heading in that. And the storms are not making it across the Atlantic because there's a big ridge there that isn't breaking. And it's just all unusual stuff. And I, you know, trying to tell people that, yeah, one weather event does not a global warming make. But when you start adding them up one by one by one, then you've got to look and say something's going on. And the people that continue to deny it are really having trouble coming up with a good argument anymore because it's just so widespread. And like I said, that's all. The hail today was unreal. And at 7,000 feet up, yeah, we do get hail. But I haven't seen a hailstorm like this since I got here. I'm back in 96. And, yeah, it just, I don't know. I don't know what other to say other than to say that, you know, for those that don't believe, I don't think there's anybody in the Horn family that doesn't, but for those that don't believe that global warming is real, start getting outside more, because it's out there, it's there for you to see. And if you're, we've got a weather forecaster here that sent out a tweet about a month or so back mocking global warming, and I thought to myself, you need to get out of the profession, because there's just no way you can sit there and deny that it's not real. It's virtually impossible to anybody that thinks. And that's where the Steve Kings and frothy mixtures come into the picture.
Oh, and there's one more. There's one more. What's this goober's name? Oh, here he is. Yeah. And I'm sure you know about this clown from before. Dana Rohrabacher.
Oh, yeah.
Member of the majority side of the House of Representatives Science Committee.
Right, yeah.
Just so you know, global warming is a total fraud. You got liberals who get elected at the local level, want state government to do the work and let them make the decisions. Then at the state level, they want the federal government to do it, and at the federal government, they want to create global government control of all of our lives. I like a little raspberry vinaigrette on a word salad like that. I mean, how you start with global warming is a total fraud, and then you're talking, what?
Well, if it's such a total fraud, how come Jan Brewer's asking for aid from the federal government that she despises?
Because it's money.
Yeah, well, you know. POTUS is way too nice, because I'd have told her to go stick it after the little finger waving incident. You know, I'd be making that.
Yeah, but she's you know, she's got to do that to keep the knuckle walkers who go drooling to the polls to vote for her happy.
Yeah, but if I'm the president, I'm not responsible for her reelection. I think I'd be doing everything I could to embarrass her. That's the way I feel about it. I just, you know, and the Yarnell thing greatly upsets me. That didn't come out of Arizona, though. The fire we had here about 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
That's when that originally blew up, because a lot of these firefighters were not getting paid as regular workers. They were only seasonal workers, which meant they didn't get any benefits, and this was your hotshot cruise on the national level, and there was a bunch of petitions and such, and the government finally changed their status to where they qualified for benefits, but these guys were literally working for nothing other than pay. No benefits, no nothing, because they had them listed as seasonal workers. And, you know, that's where that comes out of in Arizona. But to not pay when the guy is given the ultimate sacrifice, you know, to not pay that family benefits and not to take, you know, I'm not asking the family to be given $1 million and settled down somewhere really nice. I'm just asking that, you know, they don't go hungry, because their breadwinner is, one of their breadwinners is no longer with us. And
yeah, died saving a whole lot of other people.
Right. And a whole lot of people's, other people's homes and property on top of it.
But the thing is, we're talking about Arizona, and I hate to even broach this, Kevin, but I think the question is fair to ask. Arizona being Arizona, how many Republicans listened to Mayor Kuykendall and said, well, that's right. I mean, that's terrible for them poor people. But you know, we gotta be fiscally conservative and responsible here. We can't be going out there and feeding every baby of a dead firefighter that comes along. Goodness gracious, we got a deficit, right? You can hear it, can't you?
Oh yeah, yeah, and it, you know, how many dead firefighters do you have in a year across the country? Maybe 20, 30 at the most, unless it's some major disaster. You know, we're not talking about it's going to cost you a whole lot of money to do it. And on top of that, you're getting federal aid because of that fire. So what's the problem? We're going to take care of the families with some of that federal aid money. But, and that's where the hypocrisy of these people just drives me crazy, because the average ordinary person that's busy working doesn't have time to go look through and see what, you know, what all the politicians are collecting in cash that isn't being given out to the victims of the fire. The most recent fire we had up here, there was a order, I guess is the best word to say. Federal funds were not going to be distributed to the victims, but to the county. Now, where do you think all that money is going to end up? It ain't going to the victims. And so, you know.
I get it. Oh, by the way, backing up just a little bit to Stephanie Bannister, the Australian Sarah Palin.
Oh, yeah.
Marty just sent in a related Moran Monday nomination, Jim Savage, the leader of the Australian One Nation Party, for apparently saying, however, due to the threats against Stephanie's family, herself, her children, the abuse she's coped with, and the enormous pressure she's been put under, Stephanie has decided she wants to withdraw from the candidacy for the seat of Rankin. Marty noting, somehow I'm willing to bet these threats probably came from her own party, and the abuse is likely her neighborhood pointing their fingers and laughing from the belly.
Yep. Yeah. What more can you say about someone that says it's long as country?
It's gonna take a long time. It's gonna take a long, long time, Kevin, before we find a moron who can match the caliber of Stephanie Bannister, saying that. That she objects to halal labeling of food, but kosher labeling is okay with her because the Jews follow Christ. We'll be a long time finding a pro like that.
Well, what? Yeah, I can't even say anything. It just is just repeating the same thing over and over. You're just amazed at the depth and width of the ignorance. And as I put out a tweet earlier this week, it's not that they can't find out. it's willful ignorance. They don't want to know better. They have no desire to be educated. It's willful. And that's what upsets me. And that's the only way racism and things like that exist, is because you don't want to know any better. You want to live in those preconceived notions of another race or class of people. And it, you know. So, yeah. With that, I guess I'll let you go.
All right, Kevin, you have yourself a good evening, and I'm sure we'll talk later in the week.
Yes, sir, Bob.
All right.
See you later.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Kevin calling from a rain-sodden, monsoonish Colorado Springs. We will keep things rolling along at 24 minutes before the hour. A little note, we are still at $35 for tonight's fundraising, and that is, we deeply appreciate both Randy and Sal for that help. And Randy and Sal need some help along the way, too. Because, you know, listen, if I say that the hole is $400 deep, that doesn't mean it's insurmountable. Randy and Sal prove that. So we just need to, $5, $10, that's all that matters. But the fact of the matter is, while I'm not prone to talking about specifics, it won't take much to take this off the air. And the bills are due every month. So that's all there is. It just is what it is. PayPal button, headonradionetwork.com, and so too the traditional mail address is there as well. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
I just wanted to wish Kevin well, and also to wish his cat well, because I know mine don't like a lot of hail either in bad weather.
Well, it's kind of frightening, isn't it, Jim?
Well, yeah, it is. Of course it is. I mean, particularly in that part of the world. You know, where they're not used to having all these things. It's interesting, the symptomatic effects of wind and rain, that's for sure. They can be quite terrifying.
Well, without a doubt.
You know, one thing I wanted to just add, and this has really nothing to do with Colorado, but it's rainfall in dry portions of the world where you don't think there's a lot of rain. But, you know, in Egypt, they have terrific flash floods.
Oh, yeah.
And as a matter of fact, the only reason that King Tutankhamun's tomb was not discovered was because of all of the ash and trash it was carried in by a flood. It concealed it so well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, not to wax too eloquent on King Tutankhamun's tomb, talk about a put-together, that was one of them, because it was a borrowed tomb that they put him in. And when they got to the mummy, he was partially burned, and they thought it was because of Howard Carter using some type of heat source to melt the bituminous rosins of the embalming materials.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't at all. It was linseed oil. You put linseed oil in a situation and close it, and the temperature will go up to 500 degrees.
And the linseed oil
burned the wrappings and basically did a job on the mummy of King Tutankhamun, you know. That's what happened to him. And I don't know why I thought about that. I was just thinking of rains covering up the entrance in the KV, in the Valley of the Kings. And you hear that?
Yeah, somebody's upset. Is that Rupert or the Shady Lady?
That's the Shady Lady. She has been doing strange things lately. I think that maybe she's, I don't know, maybe she's found a source of something that's illicit or something. Maybe the catnip.
She found the catnip stash, in other words.
Mm-hmm. Could be, but I mean, she does that to get attention. She's an older cat, and the older they get, of course, you know, they become a little more cantankerous, like we all do. It was the passage of age. Unfortunately, age does not always improve one, that's for sure. But, you know, we have to deal with it the best way we can. And with some people, age does improve. But I couldn't believe that they offered, what was his name?
Well, I mean, it was a joke to begin with, but it was just, you know, the typical racism that comes out of the Republican Party.
I don't know. She must hear you. But nonetheless, I couldn't believe that somebody offered $250,000 to so-and-so's wife for...
Oh, Ann Romney?
Like I say, who was it? Pretty Hurts? That that program about people getting work done and collagen and all this other kind of stuff? That was just tacky. I should have said that.
Oh, well, no, that's okay. That's more than forgivable. I mean...
But, I mean, good Lord in heaven, and it's just amazing what people will do. But going back to this forest fighter's wife, that's not good, because I'm not sure now exactly what was the man's status. Was he a permanent employee?
No, he was deemed to be he was there. He was putting in 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year or whatever. But by the same token, he was designated as a seasonal or part-time employee.
Okay, that's it right there. That's what you call class and comp, classification and comprehension. And it's like, you know, if you are depending on what your status is, and people who have permanent status have certain benefits, and people who do not have permanent status or considered seasonal, they unfortunately do not qualify for said benefits. It's a heartless.
Well, especially in a job that is inherently dangerous and prone to death on the job.
Well, unfortunately, that's just the way it is.
I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but that's not just the way it is. We wind up with it the way that it is, because of a generation of anti-working people legislation that has been funded and driven and lobbied and insisted upon by so-called fiscally conservative Republicans.
Well, yeah, because you have the same type of thing in the federal government, where you have people who have different types of appointments. And depending on the appointment that you have, it depends on whether you're career and have full benefits or temporary, or if you are term and you are...
Right, I mean, I think...
I mean, this is... But what I'm trying to explain to you is this. I agree with you in spirit, I certainly do. But this is the way that they set up personnel systems.
Right, this is not by accident, this is by design.
Well, yeah, they do. Exactly.
You know, I think our buddy, Philip, who shares with you the common,
yeah, we talked about him,
the common status of being former actual employees of the federal government. Philip, you know, pointed out that, you know, that's the way the modern so-called federal system works, that instead of having people who are full-time and with benefits and health care, that you sub it out.
Well, yeah, you contract it out. That's exactly...
I mean, look, we get, not to drag this story to the into the front, but there's no getting around the fact that we wound up with the Edward Snowden issue because the government contracted out our national security to the high, you know, to the lowest bidder for the high, you know, for the highest return on investment.
Yeah, that was a bad situation there. But, you know, Bob, I'll tell you one thing, and history will bear me out of this. There have been other federal employees who have been permanent employees who had top security clearances who have, well, gone over to the other side. You know, for whatever reason, whether it's ideology or whether it's money or whatever. So, you know, there it is. I mean, people are just kind of tempted by, and they're motivated to do certain things for certain reasons. As far as Mr. Snowden's concerned, I don't know, but I don't think I'd like to be in his position right now.
Well, I mean, as much as you are an appreciator of the Russian people, I can't imagine wanting to be in his shoes there.
Mm-mm. I mean, even though their retirement system has improved vastly over the past 50 years.
Yeah, not getting killed. That's really the key to the benefits program.
Well, that's exactly what one Russian consular office told me when I was at a Norman Cousins meeting years and years ago. As a matter of fact, he was the very translator at the Molotov-Ribbentrop conference back in 1939, and I recognized him because he still had his looks. He was a very handsome man, and you know, very articulate. And I went up to him after the thing, and I had seen a picture of him in the Reich Chancellery in Berlin when they had this meeting, and also in Moscow. I'd seen pictures of that, and I said, "Were you at these?" And he said, "Yes, I was." And I said, "How amazing that you have been through so much." And he looked at me and he said, "Yes, and our retirement system has improved tremendously." She's just talking to you.
Yeah, she is. She wants in on the program.
Well, anyway, she's talking to Kevin.
Well, and a note by the way came rolling in from Darlene. She said, "Minor correction, Jim. The only reason King Tut's tomb was not robbed was due to being buried by floodwater debris."
That's what I said. The whole thing was just all the ash and trash covered it up, so no one would suspect that anything was there, and it was purely by accident. Because of some of the other tombs that were not covered up by the ash and trash or the, what do you call it, the effluvia or whatever of a rain, the byproduct of a rain of things, that's exactly it right there. I mean, it was so well covered up by just the stuff that had been washed over that it had escaped to a certain extent.
And this Robbie, this goes.
There was evidence of some type of mischief in there because things were, or at least they were in a much of a hurry to bury him and get him out of the way because of the political situation.
Well, the whole situation was ugly.
But anyway, he was buried definitely in a barred tomb in a casket that wasn't even designed for him or whatever. So.
Because he shuffled off the mortal coil at 18, and you generally expected your pharaohs to last a little longer.
And the nature of his accident, I'm not sure exactly how he was. He may have been hurt in a chariot accident, or because they have gone into different types of analyses of what caused his death. And at first they said it was because of a skull injury or something like that, maybe an assassin. Now they seem to think that it could have been perhaps an accident in a chariot or whatever. Who knows?
Stumbled going down the stairs, the wet steps of the Nihilometer, something like that.
Well, probably, you know, those boys were expected to get out and hunt with a bow and arrow, and chariots sometimes could flip you over. And he had some pretty serious injuries there. But
oh, and by the way, just to throw one more thing out there, talking about things being revealed. Saw an article, and I sent it along to Dr. John for his thoughts earlier. I saw an article over, I guess, at the BBC, and it was a fascinating story insofar as it had to do with some flyover work and discoveries made in Wales because of the drought conditions there. Those drought conditions revealed the foundation marks of a Roman marching camp in Wales probably goes back to around the time of the Emperor Claudius.
Oh, yeah. Britain is absolutely loaded with all types of things. I mean, most of their roads and stuff like that were originally constructed by the Roman legionnaires when they came in to build. And
Dr. John pointed out that the same sort of story obtains in the American West, where wildfires expose vast numbers of prehistoric sites. He said field survey after a fire season always brings new things to light. Same story in Europe, especially good for temporary sites, temporary camps, which have relatively little archaeological signature.
Well, it's amazing what the earth can conceal with the passage of time. One more thing. I saw last night on PBS the series on the Empire of Queen Victoria. And it was very interesting to note how she changed after losing her husband, Prince Albert, who was very much a progressive. And Albert, you know, advised her a lot. He died of, I think, typhoid fever or something like that back in 1861. And it was basically through, oh, maybe a third to a fifth of, a third of Queen Victoria's reign, and how she began to become more and more conservative, and how she was influenced by Disraeli and the problems she had with Gladstone and people like that. It was a very good program.
Sounds fascinating.
It was absolutely excellent, and it went into the colonization of Africa and Rhodes and people like that, and General Gordon and
Cecil.
And there were two Rhodes, actually. I'm not sure which one they were. I think they talked about both of them. But then General Gordon, of course, when he met his end at Khartoum at the hands of the Mahdi. And they were talking about Gladstone, and Gladstone, as a prime minister, would actually go into, I guess, the Whitechapel district of London, where all the prostitutes hung out, and he would try to give them Bibles and bring them to the faith. And it got to the point that Queen Victoria heard about it, and she said, the next time you come to Balmoral, you're going to have to wear an entirely different suit of clothes, because I'm not going to have you after dealing with all those women of the street.
Bless her heart.
Yeah, and she was not amused at the fact that he did that. But Gladstone's an interesting character. He really was. And so is Livingston, you know, and his inroads in trying to bear the white man's burden into Africa, and how he...
Yeah, even that concept is...
But the program ended on one thing, and I thought it was very interesting, and I'll close on this. And the narrator said, and it struck me as being very poignant, and I sent it to you, the sun never set on the British Empire, but unfortunately, it never rose in the slums of London.
So true. So very true. Jim, have yourself a good evening.
Likewise.
All right. Take care. Jim can find out now what it is that the Shady Lady's hollering about. Time to clear out a little bit. Dr. John had a road trip this weekend, found himself down in North Carolina, tried a sour ale, and yes, Dr. John, I know about them. Wild yeast fermented lactobacillus, aged in oak, very Belgian. Dr. John said, sorry, Bob, don't worry about it. I'm almost over it now. I only periodically see that skinny little Belgian bastard skipping away into the night. Dr. John tried a Rodenbach Flemish sour red ale from Belgium. He said it was incredible. You know that sharp tartness you get with a mouthful of plain yogurt? That was there, plus cranberry, sour cherry, oak, and dark malt. A life-changing beer experience. Okay, so that's the beer porn portion of the program. And Kate writing in as we wrap things up. Well, we're almost at the end. Kate just kicked $50 into the kitty. So that takes us to 315 to get us where we need to be before the next program begins. Well, we're almost at the end. Kate writes, to the listeners. Come on, folks. Bob won't say it aloud. His last remarks about bill paying for the month of July made me shudder. Apparently the power, internet, and phone are in jeopardy. Maybe there are some new listeners who weren't here when the mic went cold. It was spooky to log onto the home page and see the announcement that there will be no program because the internet has been canceled. Wow. What a loss. It takes some extra effort and a bit of sacrifice to keep this all going. If we are a family, how about we come together around the hot mic and keep it going? Thanks to everyone who does. Signed, Kate on the Front Range. Thank you, Kate. It's true. Because, you know, I simply talk about what we try to need to raise on any given evening, and then the number rolls on based on what happens from one night to the next. And at the same time, I've got a running tally of what's got to be paid when. And, you know, there's nothing that's not due. And that's what operating in a deficit hole month after month after month will do. And so that's where we stand. So thank you, Kate, for that kind exhortation. I do appreciate it, and thank you for the help. Like I said, we're down to 315 that we need to raise before 6 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow evening. It is about five minutes before the hour, and yes, as Kate said at the beginning of the program, or in her note right before the beginning of the program, there is interesting stuff coming out of Japan, and it is being scantily reported, although Mario Saito and Antoni Sladkovsky did write an article at Reuters that I have in front of me. It's from about a week ago. And again, insofar as this is an announcement from the Tokyo Electric Power Company, assume that whatever they're saying is probably a lie and orders of magnitude worse. Reuters reporting. Tokyo Electric Power Company, the operator of the crippled Fukushima nuclear plant, said on Wednesday that it cannot confirm the exact volume of contaminated groundwater that is leaking into the ocean. It cannot confirm, which is another way of saying it has no freaking idea, but they know it's really god-awful. The Japanese government believes radiation-contaminated water has been leaking into the Pacific Ocean at a rate of 300 tons a day, an industry ministry official told reporters. We are not currently able to say clearly how much groundwater is actually flowing into the ocean, said Tokyo Electric Power spokesman Noriyuki Imazumi in response to a reporter's question about the government estimate. So the government makes an estimate of 300 tons per day of radioactive water, and Tokyo Electric Power says,
who knows? I could be three dots, but you know what? They're probably overblowing it. It's probably more like 299. And maybe it's 1,000. Who knows?
As Kate noted, yes, whether we realize it or not, we are living in interesting times. Kind of reminds me of that court case I mentioned last week. Think about all the things we were thinking about in 1968, and then realized that the seeds for the national surveillance state and the war on drugs were being laid in a court case that would be decided, a pair of Supreme Court cases that would be decided a decade after Christmas Eve of 1968. Look around. That's the real trick to having some sort of prophetic vision, isn't it? Pay attention. Look around. See these things. Connect the dots. Not like all beautiful mind Russell Crowe connect the dots, but connect the dots. So there we find ourselves at the end of this evening's program. Thanks to Horst, and thanks to Jan and Jerry. They just chipped in, and it is so much needed and so much appreciated. Between the two of them, they've taken it down to 225 that we need to finish out the evening and get the bills paid. It is much appreciated, and it is why this continues on. Thanks to everyone who contributes to keep this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And here comes Rick Smith on the horn.